So, thanks for giving me the opportunity to speak a little bit to you here. You said in your introduction, Steve, that I offered to tell you something about what you British always call Europe, although I think, to be honest, I think you're part of it, if you like it or not. But that might be a bit too much. I didn't offer it. I was asked to because I might look like that. I think that I know very much about what's happening in Europe, and actually my most important experience with Europe is the fact that I live there. And so in that sense, I know a bit. But of course, I will tell you a little bit about the political circumstances in the European Union, and in some of the countries in Europe. But the second part of my talk, you'll see, I will get more enthusiastic, because then I wanted to tell you something about how we, as one of the large commercial publishers, react to these so-called Graham, quote-unquote, assaults, things like that. We don't think they are, and we try to figure out new ways of handling them. So I think, to be honest, that that's the more important and also more interesting part of my talk. I hope you agree afterwards. It's also funny that at the same time that we have this talk here about, funny enough again, US, Britain, or UK, and what we in the publishing world call rest of world, or most of world, we call it these days in our company. And it's very funny that we have these three constituencies again, because we kind of forget the real rest of the world. And there is another session right now, I think, I saw, on the BRIC countries. And maybe it's much more interesting for publishers to think about what's happening there with copyright law and with all the things that people do there to manage their intellectual property handling and things like that. Then we talking here about our own world, where we, well, at least we know a lot about it, so there's a lot to talk and a lot to discuss. Yeah, but maybe the things will move much faster in that other part of the world on which we will become more and more dependent, again, if we like it or not. So that was my introductory thought. Then I'll stand away from my slides, because otherwise you can't read them. Again, my slides are a bit quick and dirty, I have to say. I'll take my the opportunity. Oh, first of all, I want to know who's in the audience. Publishers. Librarians. I know one. Only one librarian. Oh, two. Yeah, sorry. Inis also. And the rest is consultants, Anthony? Or? Sorry. Academics? Okay, so I have a little bit of an idea who is in the audience and where I should be a bit cautious. But more or less we're under publishers, so we can reveal some small things. Because you know them anyway, the one librarian, that is. My two slides of honor for Springer. It's always the advertisement I have to do. My boss tells me to every talk we have to start like this. We claim these days to be the number two publisher, scientific publisher in the world. I don't know if everybody in the audience will agree upon that, but publishing, if you include Biomed Central, over 2,000 journals with about 150,000 articles, 6,500 books per year. I always do that per working day. That is 33 or something like that per working day. It's amazing, isn't it? And who reads all these books, you ask yourself. So 6,500 books. And this is always the claim I like most from companies like ours. 22% of the Nobel Prize winners ever published with us. But every publisher of our size can say that, so that doesn't really mean anything. This is a more important slide, because what is very important for us is that we're a global company. And global means real global. And more you see that our attention also goes to other areas than the traditional areas. And it doesn't mean that the US and Britain are not important. Of course, they're extremely important for us in our major markets. But on the other hand, there is a lot of other things happening. And this slide is already out of date again. We're opening up offices in Brazil very shortly. We have an office in South Africa now. We have an office in Dubai. Oh, that's one zone. So we are in Australia. So we're developing very, very quickly into the areas where we think it makes sense to be, more than just in the Anglo-Saxon Western European world. And I think that's very important if you look at all these developments with copyright, etc., especially in Europe, which is so fragmented, but basically there's still 26 policies going on, with the Britons having one and one of the most important ones. I won't talk about that anymore. because Graham knows a lot more about that than I do. A little bit about Europe. These are the things that our legal people told me to talk with you about. And some of the things I can even explain a little bit, but some of them I have to say are so complex that I don't even understand really what it's about. The digital agenda, if I understand it right, is the European initiative for the they call it the strategy for smart, sustainable and inclusive growth, which is of course a politician's way of saying that they want to invest money in getting better than the US and fighting the threat of China. That's basically what Europe is having its policies for in this sense, and especially fighting the US with Google as the big evil example is an important driver of what Europe does. And it's if you look at Europeana and the orphan works policies, they try to develop. That is all. One of the big drivers behind that is to prevent that Google, as an American commercial company, takes over the knowledge transfer in the world. And I think that also, from the perspective of a government, that of course makes sense that you try to do that, especially in Europe, where we have a lot of let's say more cultural things the cultural diversity that is there to make sure that it keeps on existing. By the way, for the Americans in the audience, I don't say that there's no cultural diversity in the U.S., but of course Europe, is a lot more complex in that sense than the U.S. is. This is also a good thing from Europe, right? That at least the intellectual property rights are seen as an important thing to make sure that cultural diversity keeps on existing. And although it's very general, but it's still very important, right? Because there is also countries in the world, as you said, and I mentioned one of them already, where intellectual property is not seen as very important, at least not by, well, maybe by the governments now, but not by the majority of the users of intellectual property rights. Of intellectual property. So it's important that Europe at least has this as a statement, that this is an important starting point. Europe also spends an enormous lot of money on doing all kind of research on scholarly communication. Again, if you like it or not. Some of this research, people will say, well, what the hell is it for? What will it prove? Is it well spent money? We think it's good, because it's always good to work together and see what the dynamics at the moment are of the scholarly publications communication in Europe, and that's why we are as Springer always trying to be part of this. Although, as you know, it's not easy to be part of FP7 projects in Europe, because the bureaucracy there is, I think, even bigger than it normally in Brussels is, and you have to do a lot of things to be part of such a project. But we think that PEER, which is, as you said, Graham, is a try to see. Well, I think it's the major part of it is a try to see if green open access publishing can work. Maybe that's too broad, but I think that's the way it started. And in due course, it came out that, well, it's very difficult to get it to work, especially in Europe. And actually, the take-up from the author side will be very low if you don't completely service that. Which is, of course, a big chance for the publishing industry. Servicing that could be one of our products, and should be one of our products. And I'll get back to that later a little bit. Another one we cooperate in is SOAP, which is a little bit less known, I think. It's SOAP stands for Study of Open Access Publishing, a very original name. It's a consortium of CERN, Springer, Biomed Central. That wasn't the time that we didn't acquire Biomed Central yet when we started it. SAGE, STIC, so also some British people. And what we do there, the major thing we do there is studying what the impact of open access publishing in the publishing industry and in the scientific communities is right now. And there's a huge research being done at the moment with already 50,000 academics responding to a large set of questions about why they publish with open access, who pays it, etc., all these things. And we try to democratize that a little bit, and we come back to the communities, also to the publishers' communities, to see if there's questions that you want to be answered by people that are in that response group. So it's an interesting study. And the results will be, well, the initial results are there already, and the final results will be there early next year. Another totally different publishing project is LiquidPub, also not very well known, I think. It is a study on, a more technological study on how could you, I always say, because I'm from the B2B business publishing part, how could you convert a loose leaf into an electronic product while keeping the product existing and changing on spot all the time. And that's it's more a technological thing. And also in those things, Europe invests a lot to get it done. Europe wouldn't be Europe if there also not would be a lot of countries doing their own things. And I just picked four, more or less by chance. The Danish, but it's you could almost say in general more the Scandinavians, I have always been very upfront with open access. Denmark now has an open access mandate, but only a recommendation, so that's not going to work. We decided, knowing peer. But also Sweden has already a recommendation to publish with open access. In general, the Scandinavian countries are very proactive on trying to open up the results of their scientific output. In Spain, strange enough, is also a very strong open access movement. In Spain, I think open access mandate will be there in the near future, which is quite substantial because Spain is a big country, as you might know. And that would be an important decision. One of the good things that that the lobby of the publishing industry reached there is that, well, apparently the mandate is not going to be 6 months but 12 months. That's what we think that will happen. But it's funny to see that in every individual country, these discussions are done individually. There is of course the ESF, the European Science Foundation, which also has a mandate. Well, theoretically at the moment has a mandated green open access of 6 months. Also in every country there are separate things happening. And that makes it, on the one hand, of course, more interesting and more dynamic, but on the other hand also much more intensive to keep up with all these things. In that sense, the USA is, of course, much easier to handle because there's only one mandate, more or less. Germany is always making things more complex, of course. Germany has a very, very, very thorough discussion going on copyright at the moment, the so-called Dritte Korb, or the third basket, which is a huge reform of copyright, which basically, the most important part of it is that copyright is not... is not allowed to be handed over by contract anymore. There's always a second right of the author to do with the content what he wants to do. And that is, of course, pretty dangerous. I say it in my own words. Maybe it's not completely right, but legally it might not be right, but that's the background of it. The copyright is not 100% of course, it is intellectual property right, but the publishers are not allowed anymore to fully 100% take over the copyright. And the same, actually, proposal is at the moment in the Netherlands, based upon the German proposals. And, there as publishers and also in the publishing, in the Dutch Publishing Association, there's a lot of discussion on, how could we handle with that? Because that would mean that, especially in the Dutch law goes one step further even, and says and proposes that you're not allowed to hand over copyright anymore, but also that the author always has the right to reconsider his license that he has given every 5 years. So that would mean that after 5 years on a platform, he could go somewhere else, to some other publisher, if he is not happy with the publication at that moment with that publisher. Well, these are things that are happening. So there's quite radical proposals on the table in these countries. And of course, we have to be very careful there. On the other hand, we as Springer, we think, and having a big base in Germany helps there maybe a little bit, we think that copyright in itself is not that important. As long as you're able to have the right license on the content, the commercial right license to commercially profit from it, it doesn't really matter if you have the real copyright. I have to say, in some publishers or organizations where we're in, that already is quite a controversial standpoint. So it's, in that sense, it's an interesting world. In the Netherlands, there's some other thing that one of the major funders, or the Dutch major funder, is making money available for open access publishing. And there again, of course, the cynical thing is that that money, it's 5 million this year, but it is not going to be spent. And so apparently it's still very difficult to get people really pick up that money and do something with it. Well, that is an interesting statement to go to our own policies. Because when I saw the title of this talk, I thought, yeah, come on, all against us, what's nonsense. Even if they're all against us, it doesn't really matter. Then we have to cope with it, and we have to do something. And the world is changing around us, thank God. Eh? It will be very boring. This is, by the way, making noise, doesn't it? But it's impossible for me to stand still, sorry. But it's a changing world, so we have to... We have to change with that world, and that's actually isn't that the challenge for every business. There's no business in the world that doesn't have to change according to the wishes of their customers. So who the hell do we think that we are going to tell our customers that they're wrong and that what they want is crazy? Well, of course, you can keep on telling them for some time and try to buy some time, but it's very strange to not listen to the wishes of your customers. And of course, I know all these discussions that who is our customers and et cetera, but basically that, of course, would be very strange. And we always say in talks like this, but also to our library friends, we always say there's two things we don't want to do. We don't want to fight the future, because the future will happen anyway, and we'd rather want to be part of it than fighting it. And we don't want to fight our customers, because if we fight our customers, in the end, they will go to someone else. And that is not what we want, so that's the lesson of life. Yeah, I know. So we need to accommodate to the change that our customers tell us we have to accommodate. And I think that really makes sense. And that is an interesting, you know, that is a twist of mind that makes acting against your old traditional way of thinking very much easier. So what do we do? And I'll go through this very quickly, but I think it's interesting to see why we are in the position that we do things differently than we think the most of our big competitors or colleagues, whatever you want to call it. Although, of course, it is interesting for us, and actually we were also happy to see that Wiley announced last week their open access, new open access marketing manager or something. It wasn't really clear what exact position was, but I think it's good that everybody starts realizing that open access is there to stay, and you have to do something with it. That is already a win, I think. So very quickly, what do we do? We in general have very liberal approaches, or at least we try to. And if our customers think that we don't have them, we talk with them about it, and we try to figure out why it is that they want these liberal approaches. For instance, we have ebooks without DRM and with a full ownership model. There's no other publisher that has that, as far as I know. Or maybe some smaller, but the biggest one don't. We just if a library buys our ebooks, they own them and they can do with them what they want. And of course, the only thing we fight is real piracy, is commercial piracy. But for the rest, it's like a normal book. You can give it away. You can have 100 people reading it at the same time, etc., etc. So no license, it's ownership. We have liberal archiving rights. People can, although there's discussion about that, of course, and they could be even more liberal, but in general, the archiving rights are very liberal, and we think it's important that people can archive themselves. It's one of the points of reason of a library, so I think it's important that they have the feeling that they can archive. And of course, we're in all these archiving things, like clocks, locks, what have you, British Library, Dutch Library. And this is my last five slides, we have, a forward-looking open access policy. We try to be as open and as proactive in open access as possible. Without, of course, killing our old business just like that. That's not the purpose of it. But the purpose is to be sure that we still exist if the world is going to change. That means that we're green. We have a very liberal policy of depositing. We even support compliance to mandates, but only if mandates are for longer than 12 months. Right? So we don't support mandates shorter than 12 months, and we're very clear on that, which, by the way, can have very positive effects. For instance, Wellcome Trust, who has a six-month mandate, if you say we don't want that mandate, and then the Wellcome Trust says, okay, then we pay for Vault Open Access. And that is exactly what we think strategically is where we want to go. And we want to say, okay, the service of supporting the compliance to these mandates cost money, and organizing the peer review and et cetera, are normal things where, thank God, Graham said that we are proud of that we do, and we can do very well, and it's important that we are paid for that. And one of the ways of doing that is just making sure that instead of green, we get paid to publish with gold. And that's, I think, one of the ways that with, for instance, the compliance to NIH, we try to prove. We do a lot of effort to deposit nicely into the NIH repository, et cetera, in Department Central. And in the end, then we can say, yeah, that costs money to do that. That is one of the strategic goals why we do that. Secondly, of course, I don't mention open choice anymore, because that's that was the hybrid part that we still still active, and we still think it's important. But I think you know that story now. That's 6 years old, and you know about that. Of course, the acquisition of Biomed Central already more than two years ago was an important step. Biomed Central, the biggest open access publisher in the world at that moment. It shows that we want to be in that market if it is existing. And I can tell you, Biomed Central's market, open access market, is existing. And it's very successful and it's growing. I don't think there's a traditional publisher that grows as fast at the moment as the open access publishers. And it's important. And yeah, we've decided that it's important that we're there to make sure that we get that market share. And I think for publishers in general, it's important to stay, because these are new entrants in the market, and they will take market share if we don't take it. A very nice example is Hindawi, for instance, who is a publisher of open access journals, and they publish 10,000 articles a year, and it's being paid for, and it's not the traditional publishing houses that have that market share. So it's important that you are there the moment these things could become available. And we decided to keep Biomed Central apart, to keep it as successful as it is. But we have a new policy, as you might have read about 2 months ago at ALA, we launched this. That is a program called Springer Open. And in Springer Open, we will develop fully open access journals in all disciplines, broad ones, narrow ones, in the strangest disciplines that you might not even think that there's money for open access yet. But we want to make sure that at least we have an offering for people who have to or want to pay for open access, or their funder wants to pay or whatever. At the moment, these people would either have to go to your hybrid program or to a competitor that has open access, and we want to make sure that we're there. So Springer Open is let's say, our last step to converting into that market of open access publishing, which might not take over the coming 30 years, but at least is a substantial part of publishing. Already 150,000 articles a year out of 1.5 million. So that's 10% is published with open access. So that's what I wanted to say. I hope that it was not too bad that Mrs. Bergman was not here, that you didn't miss her too much. And if you want to discuss anything, I'd be happy to.
Thank you. I think we've got time for one question. I want to make sure that Steve has enough time for his talk too.
Yeah. So.
Right here.
It's a very short one, and you may not know the answer. You mentioned the European Science Foundation has an open access mandate. I had heard that their funding was going to be cut at some time in the future. Is there a future for the European Science Foundation?
No, apparently not. That's what I hear also. But also the FP7 program, of course, has a 6 month for all their papers. For I think 20% of their papers or so, they experimentally do now a 6 month mandate. Mm-hmm. So there is in Europe, there is this tendency of trying things with a 6 month mandate.
Okay.
Which actually we asked the commission, one of the leading persons of the commission, why they took 6 months and why not 12 months or 2 years or 3 months. And they said, yeah, we had to pick something. So really, that was the reply. So we still really hope that we can make the argument that 6 months is really too short for a mandate.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Oh, that was the one question already.
Well, yeah.